quick 15-second promo for Purple Stride in April. Go!
PurpleStride.org.
/Team Trek.
We're a team! We're a team!
There's our leader, Kitty! Our vision of hope!
Hey, this is Terry Farrell of Star Trek Deep Space Nine, and I'm here to invite you to join me and the Inglorious Trekspurts as we go on the ultimate road trek, visiting the most iconic Star Trek locations ever filmed. We'll share fun facts about scenes that were filmed there, their incredible Hollywood histories. We may even fight a Gorn or two along the way. We have many special guests from Star Trek movies and series. You can reserve your copy of this epic new documentary on Blu-ray or DVD, along with a gaggle of intergalactic rewards, such as Ernie, the pet Vasquez rock, limited edition collector pins, cool sci-fi swag, autographs, of course, and so much more by going to makethetrek.com and supporting us as we boldly go to the greatest Star Trek locations ever filmed. Go to makethetrek.com and let's see what's out there. Engage.
Hey, this is Mark A. Altman.
And this is Darren Doctorman.
And this is Ashley Miller.
And we are the Inglorious
Trekspurts. And this week, join us for an in-depth and candid conversation with Star Trek Picard star Evan Evagora. Right?
Store, the Picard store.
I got to tell you.
Come on down to the Picard store at Crazy Eddie's. You won't believe our prices on Picards.
Well, I mean, you know what? I guess I'm much like our listeners. I'm so in shock that we're talking to an actor for the first two seasons of Star Trek Picard that the words are having trouble coming out of my mouth. But here's the thing.
He's lovely.
We love Evan.
We do.
He's an amazing person. I want to adopt that child.
He's a great guy. And it's funny, if you took me out to a bar and got me drunk and were asking what I liked about Picard season one and season two, it's a very short list. Evan would have been one of the things I said I liked.
Yeah.
I liked that character. Because to me, on Star Trek, you know, the alien was always a great way in to understand our humanity. Spock, Data, Odo,
Legolas.
You know, Phlox, and... Legolas. But in this case, it was a Romulan, right? Which we had never really seen as part of the ensemble. I thought that was interesting. I thought that was interesting. I think what the execution was not interesting, but I thought that was an interesting concept. So, and Evan's terrific. And we had such a good time with him this weekend, both on stage and off. And he's such a generous and warm and appreciative guy. And I'm so glad that we asked to speak to him at the convention and for the podcast, because we heard great things about him. We heard he was a great guy, really terrific guy, so we wanted to give him a platform to sort of share him with our listeners, and that's what you're going to hear.
It's funny how it came together when we got there. Because for some reason the stage was set up for two people. It went back when Inglorious Trekspurts was a single person.
It was two weeks.
The great thing is we
Darmar.
That's right. We just sat down on the edge of the stage with Evan, and it was the most casual panel we've ever done.
It was a chat.
Yeah. It was like hanging out at school with your friends during lunch.
We had a rap session. rapping.
Like you do with the kids. You rap with them.
Yeah.
You talked about Hall & Oates.
It was great. Yeah. We talked about Hall & Oates.
And how we were out of touch.
Well, it was so funny because we walk in. We had such trouble finding the stage. And we were coming from another panel. We just left I think it was, oh yeah, we had just left the Picard panel and you had just left Uri Lowenthal.
Yep.
And so we're racing to get there. So we go in and I think we're like a minute late, right? And yep. one of the hosts, you know, from the tech guys was like, and I guess he didn't know that we were supposed to moderate that. So he's like, I'd like to bring to you from Star Trek Voyager. And it was like a Spinal Tap moment. Evan, you know, I just like, I come marching in. I'm like,
Evan, he was Eva Longoria.
I felt like Captain Kirk at the end of the Deadly Years when he had gotten his power back, strides onto the bridge and stops Commodore Stone from doing something. Not Stone, Commodore. Who's the Commodore in the Deadly
Commodore. Years?
It's that other Commodore.
That wimpy loser Commodore.
Yeah. Lionel Richie.
God, we're going to get so much on social. I thought you were the Trek experts. How do you not know Commodore, blah, blah, blah? So when he's Stalker, Commodore Stalker.
Commodore Stalker, yeah. Yes.
So, God, I still got it. So when we go striding in and like Kirk on the bridge, stopping Commodore Stalker from doing something really stupid and surrendering to the Romulans. So we say, stop. We're here. We're here to do the panel. And that's when we realized there were only two chairs. And so we took our seat on the edge of the stage and we brought up Evan, and he was such a good sport. He sat right on the edge of the stage with us and we just rapped with the audience. And it was really a fun time. And then, of course, we went for drinks with him the last night as well, which is also a fun time. But we will not be broadcasting that conversation.
That's funny because I recorded all of it. What?
But this is, I think it's really interesting to hear his perspective on what Picard did right and what Picard did wrong. I think you'll find some really eye-opening anecdotes that he has to share. And I have to say, we even talk about the Fantasy Island movie, which was interesting because that was a movie I had really, I'm a big Fantasy Island fan. Sure. So I was really excited to see it when it opened, and it got terrible reviews. So for whatever reason, I did not go to see it. So on the plane, on the way here, I knew we were talking to Evan, and it was a great excuse because he's in it to watch Fantasy Island. So I watched it on the plane. Who says I don't do research for shows?
So you saw it on the plane. The plane.
Yes, I saw it on the plane. It's a good thing Sarah Nadeceni was not sitting next to me.
That's right.
So that's right. I would have never heard the end of it. So I watched it on the plane, and it's two papers. I really like Evan, and he's good in the movie. It's no problem. And unfortunately, I'd worked with Jeff Wadlow before on TV, and he's an amazing director. He's really, really good, really talented. I don't love the movie, but that's not his fault. And I know they shot in Fiji, and it was a Blumhouse, and it was, they had a lot of challenges.
Should have shot in Awkwafina.
I didn't love the movie, but there's actually some interesting things going on. But you know who's in it? You know who's in it? Who's totally miscast? Rooker, Michael Rooker. And Rooker.
I don't even know.
Rooker was on the stage when we came in to see Terry Farrell, to do our Terry Farrell Nana Visitor panel. And he, oh my God. If you think we're crazy on these panels,
he was like
in the audience. The look on Patty Hawkins' face, like he totally lost control of the panel to Rooker,
which he had,
who was like had a drink in one
hand. In the best
possible way. It was insane. I mean, he was like a tornado, Rooker. But the crowd loved it. I mean, they were packed, and they ate it up. So, but it was nuts. That was absolutely nuts. But anyway, I think this is a really interesting conversation. What surprised you guys about Evan?
You know, that kid is just he's the humility, you know, number one, right? The humility and, you know, the gratitude to have been a part of this thing, particularly towards the other actors that he worked mm-hmm. with and his mm-hmm. experiences with them. And just his... You know what? Overall, it's very easy, I think, for the actors and actors in general to feel cynical, to kind of speak about things in a certain very political way. And he was very open and honest and sunny, yeah.
You know,
which I really appreciated.
He's genuine.
Yes, he is.
He's genuine. And, you know, we don't talk about this a lot on the show, but Ashley and I are often making our list and checking it twice when we meet somebody we like. Think, well, we should, you know, keep them sort of in our good for show column. Then when we're working on something that we'd like to work with them, we'd like to hire them for something. And Evan is definitely on that short list of people that we've met at these conventions where it's like, I'd like to find something for him.
Yep, in, for sure. Because you know, he's good. And it's like, and you know that he would just be a positive experience for everybody on set.
Totally. That he'd be appreciative, that he'd be happy to be there. Because that's the thing, particularly, you know, I've shot a lot of stuff overseas and you want people, you know, who have good energy because it's very easy to be homesick and get, you know, difficult. And, you know, it's just, you want people who just are sort of grateful and happy to be, you know, away from home. But he was terrific. So I heartily encourage you, even if you're not a fan of Picard, and I know many listeners of the podcast are not, to listen to this conversation, because it's really, I think it's really interesting. He's a great perspective on Michael Chabon, who was the showrunner first season, a great, great Pulitzer Prize winning writer. And check it out, because I think it's a fascinating journey. So join us as we talk to Evan Evagora after these brief commercial messages.
Saturday, can T.J. Hooker stop a corrupt politician from terrorizing teenage runaways? Then a special Valentine cruise has everyone falling in and out of love on the love boat. And a dream to be queen.
See?
Turns to off with her head on Fantasy Island.
It's new. It's hot. It's electrifying. And only we have it. It's Star Trek, The Next Generation. Now on video cassette. And it's yours for just $4.95 for your introductory video cassette. In Encounter at Farpoint, Captain Picard and his crew are captured.
We surrender.
And must solve the mystery of Farpoint Station or perish.
In this galaxy,
it's the 2-hour series premiere, yours for just $4.95. Then your mission continues as future episodes such as The Naked Now, Haven, Code of Honor, and others take you farther, faster, to even more unusual worlds. So start your collection today with Star Trek, The Next Generation. Yours on video cassette for just $4.95. Remember, Star Trek, The Next Generation is not available here in any store. So to get your introductory video cassette for just $4.95, call now.
The Trexperts are back on the road again as
we're
our
back.
Inglourious.
We're back,
baby. We're back. The Inglourious Live Tour continues in 2024. And we're visiting some great cities near you. So don't miss a chance to get exclusive Trexperts merchandise, autograph posters, and see us moderate conversations with the biggest stars in the Trek universe coming to a galaxy or at least a city near you this year, including Richmond, Virginia, Anaheim, California for WonderCon, Oklahoma City, May 24th through 26th, San Diego, California for Comic-Con with Mark and Ashley, July 24th to 28th. But if Mark and Ashley aren't your cup of tea, well, where are they going to find you, Darren?
Well, I'm going to be in Raleigh, North Carolina, July 25th through 28th. Me only.
Wow.
It's the Trexpert Tour.
You get Darren all to yourself.
Yeah,
and
right.
Then we'll all be reuniting, and it feels so good, in San Jose, California, August
18th
to the 18th.
I know the way
to San Jose. And maybe we'll go up north to look for the nuclear vessels while we're there. Well, and we're bringing it on all home in Columbus, Ohio, December 6th to the 8th. So if you want to know what guests will be joining us and how to get tickets, go to galaxycon.com, comic-con.org, or trexpressplus.com. You'll be glad you did. We'll see you around the galaxy. Hey, if you're a fan of the Inglourious Trexperts, you don't want to miss Deck 78, our subscriber-only podcast, which deals with pop culture and Trek-adjacent subjects. It's a pretty spectacular podcast with amazing guests and conversation every other week. And the only way to get it is to subscribe today. So go to TrexpertsPlus.com. That's TrexpertsPlus.com to subscribe to Deck 78. Fire the rockets.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We're really excited. We've never interviewed this next actor. He's a staple of GalaxyCon. You know him from Picard season one and two. Sorry, really season one and a half, because he was a staple of one, and he kind of was around for two. But he made such an impression, and we're delighted to sit down with him. He's a great guy. We got to know him a little bit, and I want to welcome to the stage Evan Evagora. It's good to see you. This is like a little cash thing. You know, now here's the thing. I know, right? Let's go back. Let's go over here.
Is this on? All
right, good. Have a seat.
No, it's all good. This is more intimate. I like this one.
Let's theater in the round. Let's all pull up a chair.
We're good.
It'll be like an AA meeting or something. Okay.
Never done this before. I know. I see you every day.
Shit, one, two. Evan, I'm going to ask you a tough question to start. Why is it that all the great actors are from Australia?
There's something in the water. You know, Australia doesn't actually exist. We're all hired actors, and we
You're playing Australians?
Yeah, exactly. This accent's fake. That's actually a really good question. I think of Australian actors, you think of someone like Christopher Hemsworth, who obviously plays Thor. Think of Hugh Jackman, Wolverine. I don't know. I think there's just something about us. We're just inherently cool and handsome and
strong
and funny. Although a lot of people have been asking if I'm British this past weekend. So
do you hate that? You really hate that, don't you? You can't say it, but you hate it. I know you do.
Yeah, I hate it a little.
Yeah.
I will admit, just because we're better at them than everything except British accents. Don't tell Patrick that I said that. But no, I mean, they're colonial brethren at the end of the day. But our weather and food is just a lot better. Yeah.
And certainly the Vegemite is better. Now, is
have
it
you
true?
Had Vegemite?
I have, and no thanks. But is it true that in Australia, like, mainly your hobbies include, like, going to bars on the weekend and getting into fights?
Just me.
Okay, cool.
No, we're kangaroos, and we ride them to work and everything like that.
That's incentive for me to move to Australia.
You got to check out Drop Bears. If you've never heard of them, there are these little bears in the trees that when you're walking through the bush, they'll jump down and attack you.
God, that sounds like getting network notes.
Yeah. You know, one of the best things about moving away from Australia, and I'm sorry if I swear, but are the spiders. They're fucking massive. They're like the size of my hand on average, and I have arachnophobia, so I'm absolutely terrified of them.
You escaped them.
I did escape them.
And people think koala bears are so cute, but they're really very dangerous, aren't they?
They are. They actually spend most of their days getting high off of eucalyptus leaves.
Well, that sounds like you, Ashley.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Pot koala, right?
Yeah, koala.
Absolutely.
Well, I want to get into your decision to have a career in acting, to make the trek to Los Angeles, but and then later New York. But first, I got to ask, where are you on the Hall and Oates thing? God, they hate each other. Whose side are you on, Hall or Oates?
Neither one, because I don't know what their deal is.
Whoever wins, we lose.
Well, I think that Hall is more of the diva than Oates. I think Oates carried them more musically than Hall did.
We got to stop talking about this old stuff.
Yeah, I'm not tracking. Is this like a Simon and Garfunkel thing?
Exactly.
It kind of is. Okay. They were a discount Simon and Garfunkel.
Oh, don't diss Hall and Oates like that. You make my dreams come true.
You sound a little great out of touch.
So you do know.
To me, Darren.
I do know.
Yeah.
Not as young as we were led to believe.
Yes.
No, I just lied about my age.
So when did you decide, like, hey, you know, acting, this is a profession I'm interested in. I want to pursue this. You know, was it a teacher or was it when you were very young or did you come to it late? Tell us a little bit about sort of this road to thespianism.
Yeah, well, growing up, I consumed a lot of, and I mean like maybe a little bit too much, television and movies. I grew up watching like Buffy, Star Trek. Someone's radioing.
Excuse me,
in.
He needs to step away.
He's
stepping away.
I would just consume all of these movies, TV, pretty much raised me. And I knew I was the kid, as soon as DVDs came out, that I would watch the behind the scenes and see how everything worked, and was just fascinated with every single part of you know, the creation process. And then I, you know, auditioned and did a lot of school plays, and there were a lot of short film competitions, luckily, growing up. I managed to win a few of them. So I was just always obsessed. And I always said I'd be happy just being the person who, with the clapper loader, just claps it down and says action, because I just wanted to be a part of that magic. You know, I grew up in a time where, you know, the new Star Wars trilogy was coming out. I was lucky enough to experience the Abrams reboot of Star Trek in cinema.
Lucky is a relative term, isn't it?
yeah. You're not wrong there. Spider-Man as well, right, which was actually good, even though Tobey's not as good as Holland, in my opinion. Yeah, very
good. Tobey's not as good as Holland?
I don't think so.
Where are you on the Andrew Garfield of it all?
Garfield, I don't even put him in the same category. I do really like him as an actor, and I appreciated the approach.
So he's not amazing enough, is what you're saying.
He's maybe spectacular, but not amazing.
Yeah, he's not as amazing as the title will lead you to believe. But yeah, I remember in school, especially high school, a lot of teachers would be like, you should get into acting and all of these things. And I would turn around and tell them, you know, like 99% of actors are unemployed. Are you telling me you want me to be unemployed for majority of my life? And I never really took it seriously. I was always going to enter like film school to learn how things work behind the camera, because that really, really interested me. One of my inspirations growing up was Robert Rodriguez.
Sure.
I was a big Spy Kids fan. And, you know, when movies like Machete, which I watched way too young.
I was going to say, how old were you when you saw Machete?
I think I was like 17.
But
Pulp Fiction, 11. The Godfather, like 10.
Okay.
You know, so all of these really mature movies, I was probably consuming at too young of an age, but they were just so inspirational. And each of these directors had their own, like, feel. And the thing that attracted me to Rodriguez was the same thing that attracts me to Wes Anderson, these auteur directors, French word, author. They're very, like, world-building, and they have their own specific style when they create their projects. And I always went to film school thinking I'm going to create something like that, this new wave to come out of Australia. And then I was about 19, 2 months shy of finishing film school, and I dropped out and then started to pursue acting, because it was just something I really enjoyed. And a lot of my teachers were very jaded and bitter. You know, the industry had kind of chewed them up and spat them out, and I didn't really want to approach life with that kind of pessimism. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I mean, like, everyone goes through experiences and stuff like that. I just don't think those are the people that should be in charge of teaching and helping the next generation of filmmakers, actors, whatever it may be, grow. And then from there, I had a really bad breakup and moved to Sydney, where my modeling agency was also an acting agency, and just began to work on scenes, monologues, study other actors and read about all these different techniques, and was beginning to get some commercials. My first commercial I ever did was our equivalent of Burger King. It's called Hungry Jack's. And the catchphrase is, why are the burgers better at Hungry Jack's? And
What's the answer to that question?
Yeah, what's the answer?
I have no idea. They're actually not that good. I'm more of a McDonald's kind of guy. So I felt like I was betraying Macca's. Did I hear Macca's? I love Macca's. See, that's what we call it back home in Australia, Macca's. Americans can't really pronounce it. You heard it, so you know. I'm glad one other person knows what Macca's is.
As long as there's somebody to carry the flame
exactly.
And keep hope alive.
Maybe we can bring it to America.
Well, there's a rite of passage in Australia. You all have to be on the same awful soap opera. Did you manage to be on the famous
Home and Away? Neighbors? Yeah. Or Neighbours?
Neighbours.
Oh, no, I wasn't fortunate enough to be on Neighbours. And I actually, it's funny, I had finished filming season one of Picard, and we were in lockdown. We had a very harsh lockdown in 2020. We weren't allowed to leave out within 3 miles of our house. We had a curfew of 9 p.m., although I always broke it. I'd go walking the streets because it was just fascinating to see no one around. It was very peaceful. And then I got asked to be on Home and Away. So I flew to Sydney and did a day working on there. And then they asked me if I'd like to come back. And I said no. But that was a fun experience. But I was lucky enough to skip what Hemsworth and everyone did and avoid that. Not that they were bad shows. I mean, I watched them growing up. They just weren't my thing. I always wanted to be like a superhero or like a villain, you know, like The Crow or Legolas, even though, and it's funny.
Well, you pretty much turned into that, yes.
Yeah, Space Legolas. You know, not the blonde hair or anything like that or the bow, but I get a pretty cool sword and I think a better outfit.
Yeah. Much more.
And a phaser, yeah.
So way more accurate than a bow, by the way.
Oh, way, way more accurate. And he can move. I think Elnor's a lot less serious than Legolas.
Legolas is kind of a stiff.
He's kind of a dick in The Hobbits, too. I don't like it.
He just doesn't like those little guys. I don't know.
All right. No, there's something wrong with him. There's something definitely wrong with that man.
So you come to L.A., or did you go to New York first?
No, I came to L.A. So I did this movie called Fantasy Island in Fiji, and there's a period of time in Hollywood called pilot season. So that's when all of these shows are casting for actors, and everything that got sent to Australia I auditioned for. There was a really bad – no, it's not bad, but you know that Kiefer Sutherland film – with the vampires. Does anyone remember
Lost Boys?
Lost Boys.
One of the greatest movies ever.
He remembers
made.
Fallen Oates. He certainly remembers Lost Boys.
You remember everything. I auditioned for that, and I got sent two producers for that, and this was their fourth attempt.
Yeah, they've tried to reboot that a million times.
They just can't the oiled down saxophone player.
Right. That's what I was going for, actually. That was what I was auditioning for. Yeah. Yeah, so they ended up canceling that before it even went to production to try and film. And I was set to go back to Fiji to finish filming my film. And I remember thinking like, oh, I'm going to spend the rest of the year broke and not doing anything and pretty much trying to chase this thing that is essentially impossible, especially living in Australia. And then I got an audition for something that was coded as The Drawing Room. And the only thing I knew about The Drawing Room was that it had Patrick Stewart attached to produce. And it really did, it took me like a second to be like, oh, I wonder what that is.
You may remember him as Professor X.
I loved him as Professor X. Grew up watching him as Professor X as well as Picard. So I went in and I auditioned for it. And I left thinking I did a terrible job. And I flew to Fiji the next day. And then I got a call saying, you and four other people are being considered for this role. I thought, yeah, that's cool. I'll never get this. Like, this is, I've come this far. That's a success. That's as good as it'll get. And then the next day, I get a call saying, oh, it's you and two other people now. And the producer,
those other two have been killed.
I made sure of it. I got the names and I sent the text out. I'm like, we need these people gone ASAP. But yeah, I had a... not a Zoom, I had a phone call because Zoom didn't exist back then and Fiji had really, really terrible reception. So I had a quick call with Hanalei Culpepper. She was a producer on season one and also directed the first... Oh, there's a party going
on. We have a soundtrack.
We'd rather have Hall & Oates, thank you.
Or the Rolling Stones. It's good.
We love it. It's good music. So she rang me, gave me some notes, and I had just developed a chest infection. I was feeling really sick.
Nice.
I was being pumped full of medication while filming, and I did this in a hotel.
So many actors have done that, but it's not really medication. It's not prescription, but go ahead.
Oh, it wasn't prescribed.
Okay, good.
I just raided the medical cabinet.
Oh, cool.
Fiji's easy to access all of that.
Just the water.
Well, people forget this is a Blumhouse production. And so nobody's getting paid a lot. There's not a lot of money for anything.
No, I actually had a bit of a meltdown the last night on set because everything was running really behind and I'm in like head-to-toe prosthetics and I was in the prosthetics for like 16 hours.
Oh, my God.
So my body went into shock and they ended up having to give me like a Valium to calm me down. But I remember going through it and the... You think all these sets are like everyone's got their own like caravan or RV or something like that. We were in a bus, just like 10 of us, and I was sleeping. It was like 4 in the morning. I woke up and I was in a panic and I like ran And production stopped me. They're like, what's going on? I'm like, I don't know. I was swearing my head off. I'm like, what the fuck's going on? Like, just like, I'm freaking out here. Get me out of this suit. And the doctor came up and was just pretty much like, have this. It'll calm you down.
Mother's little helper.
Yeah.
Well, but if you're one of the six people who've seen the movie, he's in this full body burn prosthetic. Yeah. And it's just like, I mean, from head to toe, you've been, you know, seared in a fire.
Was his fantasy to have a Valium?
In which case, fantasy fulfilled.
Maybe 10 Valium if that was the case. But yeah, I auditioned for there and with a bed sheet and someone who's never read across or acted across it from anyone in their life. And I sent it off. And then I think it was like 6 or 7 in the morning after that crazy night. And I get a call saying you've gotten the role. And you'd think I'd be jumping up and down, really, really excited, but I wasn't. I just wanted to sleep. I was like, yep, cool. Hung up the phone, went to sleep. Woke up like 2 hours later being like, oh, is this real? And then I came home, packed all my stuff from Sydney, moved back to Melbourne, got rid of more stuff, and then I was on the way to LA in Santa Clarita.
Santa Clarita. You missed out.
My neighborhood.
Yeah, your hood.
You missed out on the days of shooting on the Paramount lot, obviously, where there's so much history, but at least you weren't in Toronto. You were in Santa Clarita,
and that was lucky.
Because Patrick wanted to shoot
in
California. He wanted to shoot in town. Yeah. What was that like for you? Because obviously you talk about, you know, you're a pretty young actor. You hadn't done a ton yet. And here you are acting across from Sir Patrick Stewart, who you grew up on.
Yeah, it was terrifying. Absolutely terrifying. My first day on set, I was meant to go do sword training and the producers took me aside and Patrick was filming the scene in season one where he's giving that interview, if any of you remember it. And the producers turned to me and say, would you like to meet him? It's like, yeah. I'll meet him. And they go up. They whisper in his ear. He looks up over to me, nods, makes his way towards me. He goes, hi, I'm Patrick. I say, good, thanks, and shake his hand. Don't introduce myself at all. I was so, so nervous meeting him. And I just made like a fool of myself. And it was kind of similar when I met Frakes as well. He's like this big, jovial guy and, you know, really, really friendly. But it's just, you know, you see these people on a screen and you build up this idea of what they're going to be like. And, you know, you associate them so much to their character and they are it. They are that person, but they're also not. And, they just made me feel really, really welcome. My first scene that I shot, I had a panic attack. Didn't think I could do it. And,
did they give you a Valium?
I wish. Well, I mean, medication is expensive here. So, you know, I don't think I was insured yet. And Patrick took me aside and he just like calmed me down. He was telling me, you know, 3 weeks before production started, I nearly like walked from the show and I was kind of like shocked. I'm like, why would you walk from this show? It's such an amazing, like amazing thing. Like your character's so iconic. And he said, I was so afraid of the expectation behind this show and what I wanted to deliver to the fans. And then I said, well, why'd you stay? He said, I stayed for the fans because they have a right to see something like this. They have a right to, they want this, I'm going to give it to them. And he obviously knocked it out of the park, but it was just great hearing that someone in their 70s who's done these blockbusters and worked in this industry for so long, and it's just this esteem that he is a sir for acting. You know, he is knighted for acting, and he's still getting nervous, and he's still feeling that kind of anxiety. So it made me feel a lot better.
Did you read his biography, his memoir?
He sent it, but I haven't read it yet. I'm not a big reader.
Did he sign it?
Yeah, I barely read lines.
You should get the audiobook version. He reads it, and it's lovely.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I hear his audio of that and Brent Spiner's book is apparently the audio is better than actually just reading it yourself.
It is, because he's telling you the story. And it's
Once upon a time, I was a young man.
I feel like he's here.
And I learned acting, and then I went on Star Trek, the end.
What a story.
But, you know, it's interesting because, look, a lot of shows, they don't treat new people well. And particularly somebody who's a little green, they say, oh, he can't hack it, like bring in somebody else. Star Trek has always been very welcoming of guest cast. And you know, that's because of Jonathan and Brenton. They were really, they had a good time, but they never were jerks to the guest cast. And I think part of that was because they kicked around for so long and it was such a gift. So how lucky it must be to have been so welcomed, obviously with Jonathan directing and, you know, Sir Patrick, and to be put at ease, because it's not easy to be first big American television production.
Yeah, it's not. I thought every week I was going to get fired. And I think Chabon, after episode 6 had been written.
Michael Chabon, the showrunner.
Yes, Michael Chabon, the showrunner, the amazing actor. He told us someone's going to die. And then I remember calling home being like, I think they're going to kill me off. Little did I know a season later. But it was a worrying thing, but it was nothing to do with the actors or the environment, because it got to the point where stepping on set, I felt so comfortable. It just felt like how you'd play when you were a kid, you know, you just let your imagination run wild and have the best time.
And you worked with a couple of other actors who were just terrific. I mean, Allison Pill has been in so many great
shows. Fantastic, yeah.
That must help too, because they say, you know, rising tide lifts all ships.
Yeah, the level of professionalism that she brought to set was, I'd say, unmatched. I mean, maybe matched with Patrick and probably, I'd say, Whoopi in terms of professionalism. But that's the thing. Each actor has a different approach. Each actor does things differently. So I'd see Patrick doing things. I'd see Allison doing things. And even Michelle and Santiago, all their processes are different, because there's many ways to skin a cat, right? But it was just interesting to observe and watch and see all their processes. And they all did a fantastic job at the end of the day. They all brought the A game. Santiago, especially when he was playing all of the holograms, you know, that's a difficult thing, because you're essentially acting by yourself, pretending that you were there. It's a hard task, but he nailed it.
Can you think of anything specific from all these different processes that you saw that you thought, you know what, that's really a smart way to prepare, or that's really an interesting way to get into character or to approach the stage? Is there anything that you kind of adopted for yourself?
Well, Allison had everything, had the entire, if we would just learn, do a scene a day, for example, so we'd get given our sides, but Allison would have the entire episode script and would have everything highlighted and would have notes and everything, so she could track everything. And I think for a big project like that, that's a very smart analytical way to process things. But then you look at someone like Patrick, especially when Jonathan was working, he would do a take one way, and then he would ask Jonathan to do another take and he'd do it completely differently. And the interesting thing about that is, when you're on stage and you're performing theater, you got one take and that's it.
Right.
You got to very much be in the moment. But the great thing about being on a TV show or a film is you could do a take where 90% of it is terrible, but there is a great 10%. And an editor can find that 10% from each thing, and it could have a different feel, each take, a different everything, and create this beautiful, I guess, like chopped up piece that just looks fantastic. And I learned that from Patrick. He tried different things, and he wasn't afraid to take risks.
And here you worked with Patrick Stewart and Jerry Ryan, who was so wonderful, and Jonathan behind the camera. And I'm so pleased to see you wearing a William Shatner t-shirt.
I know, if only he'd sign it, if only he'd talk to me. But
are you a fan, or are you wearing it more just
I'm repping. I am a
more to celebrate the legacy.
The Star Trek legacy. Yeah, play on words there. It would be great if he could return in some capacity, like Lower Decks or something like that. It would be great to see them return just in any kind of thing. I mean, I saw the animated stuff that they've been releasing on their YouTube channel. Did you
hear
that?
Right.
Some really out there creative stuff. Yeah,
out there is one word for it. Yeah.
Yeah, very, very out there. My friend Shane got me onto him. He's right there. Very, very big Trek fan. That's actually how we met, over his love of Trek and mine. And anything I didn't know while filming, or my mom didn't know, I'd ask him and he'd have the answer.
He was your Star Trek encyclopedia?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, they have all of that too. There's a Romulan department. They teach you how to pronounce words, and there's a whole alphabet process. The annoying thing is, when I got the gig, they sent me all of these episodes about Romulans.
Right.
And I didn't have to know any of that because the Koama Latin and how my character is just nothing
it's
like...
It's completely different than Romulans that we've established. Yeah,
it's everything that I learned. I'm like, great. Oh, I have to unlearn all of this as well. And on top of that, keep my Australian accent. I was like, let's do it. Let's roll with it. Let's roll with it.
Yeah. So you went and looked at Balance of Terror and the Enemy and the Defector.
I think there was some Borg episodes in there as well. There was something from most of the series. I think a bit of DS9, but it was mainly TNG. I think a bit of Voyager. No TOS. No TOS, though.
And Lord of the Rings.
Oh, yeah, and Lord of the Rings, yeah. They sent me, Shaven sent me a big poster of what's his name? Legolas.
Orlando Bloom.
What's the actor's name, though?
Orlando Bloom.
Orlando Bloom. How could I forget such a beautiful name like that?
It sounds beautiful
like
a flower. Name for a beautiful man. Yeah.
But, of course, you know, the other main elf character in that is Elrond.
I know. Yeah, you know, Patrick actually called me Elrond a couple of times, and Eleanor on set.
Yeah, Eleanor.
Yeah, that was fun.
So I think the intent was there. They knew what they were doing, and they wanted to sort of capture that spirit in the show.
Well, Elnor in Elvish means to trek the stars. So I think it was very intentional.
I did not know that.
Your name was actually Star Trek.
Yeah, it was actually Star Trek in Middle Earth. Yeah.
Did obviously, you know, you talk about Titans, but Michael Chabon is a Pulitzer Prize winning writer. He's never really run a show before. Was there much communication with him as the showrunner?
So much. Michael would be writing an episode while we were filming. He would be there. So if you had any question or anything, he's literally right there. You'd yell at him, Michael, pop his head up. And he writes so fast and his process is just so out there. But he was very, very available to us and very supportive as well.
And then obviously second season was the thick of COVID.
Yes, I actually shut down set. I tested. It was a false positive, but we were shooting at SoFi Stadium in LA, and you have to get tested every day. And I did my rapid test, and I fell asleep in my trailer. And then I get a knock on the door. I open the door. Everyone's standing like 10 feet away. I'm like, "What's wrong?" They're like, "You tested positive." I'm like, "I haven't seen anyone. I haven't done anything. How could I have gotten this?" And it turned out to be a false positive. But the problem is, during that time, any recording of a positive shuts down.
They
got
to shut down everything.
Yeah, so I shut down the most expensive part of filming for 2 weeks.
Well done.
I know, but...
It wouldn't have been his fault even if it was not a false positive.
Exactly. But they were like, who have you been in contact with? And I was like, to be honest, I've hugged everyone. Yeah. I hugged Patrick, so I was freaking out that I
killed Patrick Stewart.
Yeah. Can you imagine? That's what I'd be known as.
Imagining, because we were in the art department, and on that March day, they said, everyone's going home. We're working from home if we're working at all.
Elnor screwed it up for everybody. Yeah. Mr. Star Trek.
Yeah. Dumb space elf. Anyway.
Were you surprised that... You weren't given a more to do in the second season. I mean, obviously, that was such a challenged season because of COVID, because of the pandemic. You know, Terry came in for two episodes, then he was off doing season three, and it was all chaotic. And you had, you know, sort of Akiva jumping in, then leaving to do his show. That it was so chaotic. I mean,
it was, and I will be honest, it did go through a lot of rewrites. So I've read many different versions. I've read a version of season two, about four episodes, that's just written by Michael, you know? So it's very much what could have been, I would say. We were meant to start filming January 2020. And right. The goal was to always have three seasons, and seasons two and three were always meant to be back to back. But I think it would have been a very different series had it started filming in January 2020.
I mean, COVID really threw an accent to the machinery. Things changed so dramatically.
Yeah, it did.
For you know, in so many, and then even the way it was written changed. So there was more outdoor scenes. There were less company moves. I mean, it was sort of constructed to be more filmable, and also the cost had go up so astronomically because of the COVID mitigation. So they also had to cut the budget, yeah. And that changed a lot of things for people.
It did, and it felt very much like, and I'm not trying to throw shade or anything, but it had a very procedural feel, season two. It almost felt like an LA drama.
CSI Starfleet.
Yeah, literally though, yeah. And yeah, it is to do with budgets and everything like that, but I do think it is also a case of maybe too many cooks in the kitchen trying to get their vision across, and it just got a bit like muddied along the way.
Yeah, it's interesting because Star Trek is traditionally, when they do time travel, go back in time for an episode or maybe a two-parter. This is a whole season. And, you know, anyone who kind of understands the behind the scenes of it all, it's because it's cheaper to shoot downtown Los Angeles than it is to create the future, you know, and create all those sets and build all those sets. And, you know, that's a lot of why that whole idea of, you know, I mean, it's an episode that literally takes place in a parking lot, you know, it takes two people in a parking lot talking. So when Star Trek kind of, you know, has its run, you know, what have you, I mean, you must have been surprised by how much the fans embraced you, because, you know, you're what they call a fan favorite, you know, in terms of your character, and going on this whole trek to the conventions and meeting so many people. What has that been like? Because, you know, Vegas and all the GalaxyCon and everything.
We had our first press thing. It was San Diego Comic-Con, and it was a stage of like, maybe 1,000 people just cheering, and they were cheering for all of us. I mean, it made sense why they were cheering for Frakes and Patrick and Brent and Jerry, but we were complete strangers and we were immediately embraced. And it was interesting being on the other side instead of being in the crowd, being like, this is amazing. This is an awesome experience. You know, another Trek show was coming out. No, it was just something that I was a part of, and we had been filming for 4 months. And when you're filming, you're very isolated because the focus is just on the work. And this is the first actual interaction. And it was just such a lovely thing to be embraced and to continue to be embraced. And a shock to be a fan favorite, to be honest. Elnor does remind me of Worf a lot. I'd say a mix of like Worf and Data. The reason why I say Worf, though, is because Klingons he broke the perception of them. And what they were, and I felt like Elnor was similar with the Romulans, although he has a bit of naivety and, I don't know, like blissful ignorance, I guess, the same as like Data kind of does too.
Well, it's interesting because the alien characters are often the gateway to most understanding humanity in the Star Trek shows, whether it's Spock as a Vulcan or Data as an android or Odo as a changeling. And in your case, you know, you were sort of the alien and Seven of Nine and Voyager.
Yep.
And so for you, you were the Romulan, you were a new character. I'd never really seen a Romulan who was part of the main ensemble.
Yeah.
So that must have been interesting for you to explore, and I imagine wanting to explore further as well.
Yeah, and I actually, the most helpful thing I ever read on it was Michael Chabon wrote an article in COVID, or an essay about Romulans and their history and everything. And he had written this extensive background on them, things that like I never knew. You know, they're always in threes. They don't have a partner, they have partners. And that's so, they all can't lie to each other. You know, if someone is caught doing something, one of them is always going to know. It's just a very intricate, culture and civilization. And I wish and hope that we do get to find out more about them. I was hoping to explore that a little bit more, but who knows if there's another show or something like that, we can explore Romulans a little bit more.
It's time for you to write a novel, one of the Star Trek novels. No, you can't even read a novel. You're
exactly,
not going to write one.
Yeah. So let's maybe audio book.
I know, maybe an audio podcast like Nick Meyer. So I know there's probably some questions you want to ask for Evan. So there's no mic to line up at, but
no,
you just
is.
Raise your hand. Oh, there is. Look, there's a mic.
There's a mic.
So
it's to your right.
Thank you. Line up over here and ask it. Or you could just yell from your seat.
Just yell.
It's okay.
One, raise your hand.
We don't have to be that. You know what? It's actually better to go to mic since we're recording it so we can hear your questions.
Excellent. Thank you, sir.
And don't be afraid.
So
I've been going to conventions since 2011, some in 92. My first question ever.
Nice.
At a microphone.
Oh. Make it good.
Yeah.
It's
not that good, but I was just wondering if you could talk more about the training that you had to do, because that had to be a real challenge, because everybody's trying to learn their lines and keep up with the schedule, but yet you've got this whole training thing to do too. So how did you approach that?
The training, they sent me in straight away. So they gave me this plastic sword the first day, and they were like, this is your friend. Get to know him. They had me going through stances. I was doing like 4 or 5 hour days of just learning how to move a sword before we even started sequences. And then it just went from there. It almost became, once you learn all the poses and everything, like a dance. And then you just go through it section by section by section. And then anything that I do in season one where I'm like flipping in the air isn't me. It was my really, really talented stunt double. But second season, because I had been so eager to try everything in season one, they were like, do you just want to do your own stunts? And I was like, yep, let's give it a go. So that process was a little bit harder because it's everything that's me. And a professional can just go and do it in like 2 seconds. You know, there is a learning curve, and I do have a background in martial arts, but I'm nowhere near like a black belt or could beat up anyone, you know, so.
But after they do a stunt, they can go rest it off, and then, but you would have to go on and do more scenes.
Exactly. Yeah. So it was like physically and mentally draining. I'd say the only benefit about doing it in season two is we were restricted with how long we could work. So the first season I was up at like 3 a.m. getting to work at like Santa Clarita at like 4 and heading into wardrobe and makeup, and you know, I wouldn't get out until it's dark some days, because being the newest cast member, guess whose scenes would get shot last? Mine. But who was always there in the makeup chair first?
Yeah,
me.
Like a good boy.
Yeah, exactly. I do what I was told, which was really nice, because it was a great experience, and I'm not complaining about it, because they fed me well, they looked after me, and I took a lot of naps in season one.
So I assume when they did the scenes, it wasn't just, we'll train you, then you do your thing, and we'll shoot it. I mean, it was highly choreographed, right?
It was highly choreographed, and then we would do the sequence, and the stunt team would actually plan the shots that were done. So they'd get their iPhones out and kind of edit a bad version of what the fight would look like. And then like Frakes or whoever was directing would come in, and Scott, the head stunt coordinator, would help oversee the sequence while we shot it. But it was a lot, like having to do, because you'd have to do the stunt one way, different angle, next angle, next angle, next angle, next angle, next angle. So it was like, it was exhausting, but it was fun.
Did you ever accidentally kill anyone?
I accidentally hit someone in the face on season two. That scene where where I'm getting beat up, and then Rafi's like, now. And then I spring into action. I hit a stunt person in the face because they didn't move in time. And there's like, I'm pretty sure there's a take where I hit them. My face goes, and I'm meant to move out of the way for a punch, and then a punch comes and clocks me in the face. So it was almost like instant karma. But it's just like all adrenaline, and thankfully no one got seriously injured. Yeah.
So you never got injured from any of that?
I had a spark blow up in my eye, and I couldn't see for like 3 hours. In the second season, where he's running through in the alternate scene, that's just someone triggered it at the like way too early, and it just blew up in my face. I can see, which thankfully, but that would be, I'd say, those sets are really safe. Yeah,
good deal.
Fortunately, there was plenty of Valium on set. So he's scared of spiders, so don't get too close. But
he's not scared of Spider-Man.
No, Spider-Man is not. Yeah, so yeah, bring that down and ask your question.
I was wondering if you could do your best pickup line as your character.
You know what? In my entire life, I have never heard that question asked at a con. So congratulations, Spider-Man.
No, that's...
That's a
you deserve kudos for asking that question.
We're floored. That's great. Yeah.
That's actually a good one, but so my character speaks very candidly, so he tells the truth and sees things very literally. So if he was to approach someone at a bar, I think it would be like, can I give you enough alcohol to convince you to come home with me? And probably something like that. So it wouldn't be very smooth or anything like that, and they'd probably get weirded out. Did I do good?
Thank you, yeah.
Thank you.
Don't try that at home.
Don't try that at home.
Yeah. Bad advice. Don't do it.
Well done. Did you want to go to the microphone?
I just wanted to ask, how was like that 3 hours being line to line? Was it miserable or?
No, we had to keep shooting.
Magical.
I had to do the stunt again. So it was just kind of like the medical came and checked on me and like looked at my eye. And I don't know if anyone suffers from migraines, but initially it was like, yeah, a lack of vision. And then eventually it was just like there was something in the middle of my eye being blocked. And then it was fine.
And they said, oh, you're fine. Get back to one.
Pretty much. Yeah. They're like, all right, and rolling. Back to one. Back to first position. Let's go.
Can I audition for Daredevil? Okay.
Hi. So I just want to say, I don't know the first thing about you. I kind of just walked in midway through. Okay. Never saw your shows or anything. So I apologize if this is something that's you've already covered or something. But I did hear that you want to do like superhero stuff. So I just wondered, kind of like a two-part question, but would you rather be in the Marvel Cinematic Universe or the DC?
DC.
Okay, DC.
Well, why?
And then
tell us why. Expound on that. That's a great question, by the way.
My dream would be to play one or two characters. Terry.
Arrow.
No,
he's about to say Terry McGinnis.
The red, yeah, Terry McGinnis.
Yep.
And
Batman Beyond.
And the Red Hood.
Oh,
dude, you would crush Terry as either of those. That would be great. I said you would crush as either of those.
Who's Terry McGinnis?
Batman Beyond.
Oh, Batman or Red Hood. Who's Red Hood?
Red Hood is Jason Todd. So he was the second Robin.
Formerly
Robin. A Death in the Family is the comic
Joker
book.
Beat him to death with a crowbar.
With a crowbar.
Okay. Then, thank you. Yeah, I know who it is.
I could go on, but he comes back as like an anti-hero.
So you want to be Batman or Red Hood?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Thank you. So that answered my question.
We need to go to Sean Gunn's booth and tell him to tell his brother James. There it sits. Yeah.
Pretty much. I could buy him a drink later.
I can totally see you as Terry McGinnis.
Yeah.
And
it's time for a Batman Beyond film. I mean, why that hasn't
been
done is ridiculous. How many great actors are there to play the old Batman?
The old and busted Batman, as opposed to the new hotness Batman.
Yeah.
But why make anything the fans want, right? Let's just make a bunch of crap nobody wants to see. That's why you have to hashtag
Don't
Star
tell
Trek
that
Legacy.
To Sean, then.
Yeah. Yes, sir. I am Jim. I was with my daughter Jenna in the scooter over from Illinois.
Hey, Jim.
Wonderful to meet you.
Thank you.
I really liked your character. What was it like to work with Jerry Ryan?
Jerry has a really infectious laugh. So that was probably my happiest time working in season one was with Jerry alone on the Borg cube. And we were always the last people shooting. And we would try and just ruin each other's takes by making each other laugh. Yeah, she really brought the fun to the set. And she was just like a pleasure to be with. It was almost like having a big sister on set. That's like why season two, like I always call Michelle and her Eleanor's mothers, because we're just like a weird, you know, little trio, weird little family.
What's so great about Jerry is she knew what it was like to be the new kid on the block, but she came in the Voyager,
yeah,
you know, later, and so she knew who treated her well and who didn't necessarily treat her as well,
yep.
And she did made a conscious effort to treat everyone really well.
Yeah, and she does.
And she did. And, you know, I think that's why people love her.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I love her. She would speak up for you if she saw something that she didn't like or she thought was wrong on set. Even if you weren't an actor, if you were just like a PA and something wasn't right, she'd speak up.
She's just a genuinely awesome individual.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Almost like a captain.
Especially over the last 100
200 or so days from the strike. And
so he was on the line every day.
Yep. Mama bear energy.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. And you also look at, you know, Terry Metalis, who ran season three and who was involved at the very beginning of season two. He was an intern on Voyager, and the person that he, who treated him well, who he had this great relationship, was Jerry. And here he is years later as her showrunner and writes this incredible part for her. So it just is another reason why you should treat people well, not because you, you know, it all comes, the karma all comes around.
Yeah, I had a question about a video game called The Quarry. Can you talk about working on that?
Yeah, what would you like to know?
I just want to know what the, as an actor, you know, I mean, I'm very ignorant as what all goes into making a video game, especially these days. They make them so lifelike. It's such like a movie, and I know there's a lot of motion capture involved. Mm. And I just want to know kind of like what, how's that for you as a new actor coming into this? And it seems like that's kind of going to be a normal thing as video games progress, that they are going to be kind of these interactive movies with lifelike, you know, well, like live living characters in them. Were you on set with a lot of people at the same time interacting, or was it just seriously like motion capture and you go away and, you know, you do your lines and go away, or what was that like?
It is funny you ask that. So we did the body scan. So everyone goes through a scan. They scan every single part of you to make sure that your character looks like you. And we did the body scans November 2019.
Oh, wow.
And we were set to shoot for 9 weeks, March 2020.
Oops. Oh, perfect timing. Yeah, and so that video game didn't come out until what, last summer?
Yeah, last summer. Yeah. So we filmed it on January 2nd, 2021. And I filmed it for, we shot for 6 weeks. And you're in a room smaller than this. There is nothing there. You're wearing mocap, which is essentially a scuba suit. You have 30 dots on your head, and you're wearing like a bike helmet with a camera in your face. And then there are cameras all around the room capturing every single thing that you do. And initially we were going to be doing it with everyone like it's a movie, but you could only work with three people, three actors at a time. So I'd be talking to you as if you're an actor and then saying my lines to a broom handle that was just stuck up in the air as if that there were a character there. But as a new actor, I found it like really freeing because there's nothing there. It's all your imagination. You all you have to make it feel like it's real.
And that broom handle could really act.
We did some of our best work.
I heard the broom handle was a little wooden.
I kissed a character in two characters in this game. None of them were at work that day. Oh. I was sat here like this, pretending to kiss the thin air for like 30 minutes. And I think they did 30 minutes just because they just thought it was too funny for me to stop.
That's on a cutting room floor somewhere that somebody has. It's out there. I know in that game there's a lot of like interactive decision making where it changes some of the story of the game as it goes on. Mm-hmm. How's that for you as an actor? And you prepare for this one particular outcome and then you prepare for another outcome. What was that like for you?
It was a 900 page script. And the scenes were like done in five different ways. But I think honestly, like seeing someone like Patrick, like we were talking about before, where he would approach one scene and do it one way and then do it differently the other. Okay. This just gave me options. Mm-hmm. I'll be honest, we had a TV that had out because they were like, there's no way all of you are going to know all of these lines to all of these different things. So like we would all just walk over to the TV, quickly look, run back. Okay, you set action, do the lines, do it that way. If they didn't like it, they just make you do it again. But it was very, the whole process was very, very quick.
Well, I've played through most of the game. It's pretty fun, like sort of 80s horror slasher camp video game. So I enjoy it. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Well, in that sense, it's not that different from acting in front of green screen on a TV show, which must have been, was new to you. You know, they don't really teach you that. Now people, the volume is prevalent, so you actually do see the images on the LED screen. But what was it like on Picard? A lot of green screen work and, you know, not knowing what you're seeing. You really rely on the director or on your own intuition and script?
Well, it was very practical, too. I mean, you went on the set, yeah? Yeah, you saw it. It was like a two-story spaceship.
They built a lot more than they needed to.
Yeah. And a lot of the, even like a lot of the stuff I was touching when I was working and broke, not on purpose, but I was just like, You have a black thumb and you destroyed everything.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. I mean, Mikey, the head of props, like, would really make sure that once the scene was cut, I wasn't allowed to touch anything. And I think that's also because I was trying to take home a lot of stuff too. Just because who wouldn't when you're on a set like that? I mean, I took Whoopi's headpiece that has her name on it on her last day because I was like, no way I'm letting anyone else have this. I deserve it. So
there's a great history of Star Trek actors taking home props. And that's the reason a lot of this stuff has been preserved. If people, you know, starting with Gene Roddenberry, he was taking home the most of anything. Go ahead. And then we'll go to...
You said they gave you a lot of Romulan episodes to watch before you filmed on the show. Were there any of those that you asked for war stories from the filming of, from the cast and crew after you got to working on it?
No, but there were a few episodes that I watched. Like, I talked to Brandon about, like, Measure of a Man. I talked to Patrick about, like, the Captain's Holiday. So by watching those things and reading, like, a lot of the Trek Online articles and stuff, I'd want to know, like, what it was like filming, you know?
You know, there's a podcast called The Inglorious Trekspert.
You should have me on. You should have me on. We should do this. But, yeah, you know, it was just like being a fly on the wall. And then when you get all the old gang together, all they do is rip on each other and talk about stories from the past. So that was, like, the best thing about it. So I'm hearing all of these, like, old war stories organically.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd ask Patrick a million because he loves to talk. That sounded mean. When you prompt him, he's like really happy to answer your questions and talk about things. So I was the one who would know all of this stuff. I accidentally outed to the group that I knew the kids here. I knew Patrick wasn't circumcised because of a Graham Norton interview.
You learned it on the Inglorious Trekspert.
Yes. But I said that to the group.
That wasn't in his memoir.
It definitely was. It was Graham Norton. I learned that from Graham Norton.
I was uncut. It was so very gentle.
It was cold.
Last question.
Yes. Talking about Patrick, who I've admired forever. Considered my Star Trek from my generation, but with you being why I'm here, you're relatively new, everything. What was it like for you to work with somebody with that kind of stature in the acting field, like Patrick? Was it intimidating, or did you see it before as a gift of sorts?
I think both. I don't necessarily know if it was a gift I was ready to receive. But like if they called me up tomorrow and they're like, there's a season 4 and you get to work with Patrick, every day I went there, I watched him work and his process. And it's honestly, when you are working across from an actor like that, it's the best education anyone can receive. Because there's a reason why he's Sir Patrick Stewart. But it was I'm very, 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 very lucky to be working opposite him and have my name eternally attached to his too.
Well, a big thank you to Evan for being here. A big thank you to you all. Thanks for coming. And we're looking. Oh,
and there's one more question.
He can ask you questions anytime. He's your buddy.
I know.
He's a ringer.
I just wondered what's next for Elnor.
What's next for you, Evan? Because we got to wrap up. I'm getting.
Not much. The strike's ending. Hopefully, you know, Elnor comes back. Either in live action or the animated space, who knows? You know, it's sky's the limit.
Fantastic. Well, everybody, thank you, Evan. That was great. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And we'll see you at the Trekspert's Holiday Special on the main stage.
And we're back, and now we know the truth about Patrick.
Oh, my God.
Well,
yeah.
Some of it.
I thought we knew everything. I was wrong.
Yeah, but no, I know. I was like, boy, I thought we had some great revelations. And we did a whole episode about his memoirs, and it never came up that he was uncircumcised.
It never came up.
I hesitate to discuss how Evan learned
that, but I'm a little embarrassed. However, I'm glad it's out there, so to speak.
All I want to know is, Mark, is when we drop this this particular episode of the podcast, will the interview be uncut?
Oh my!
Oh, oh, dun dun! Try the veal.
Wow,
you'll be here all week. Wow!
Never laugh at your own joke, but goddamn.
No, that's pretty funny. I got to give
that's
you credit
actually
for that
a good
one.
Title for the episode: Star Trek: Picard Uncut with Evan Avigora.
Oh my God! Let's do it. Let's do, see. This is how we this is, we work it all out on the podcast. We figure all this stuff out. Oh so, oh my God, the hashtags will be great. but yeah, look, we're, as you can tell, we're all big fans of Evan. We wish him well. I think, you know, it's he really wants to come back on the podcast. I'm sure we'll have him back at some point.
Yeah.
If you have a chance to meet him at an upcoming convention, definitely take advantage of the opportunity. He's a terrific guy, and I think you'll really enjoy it. And we heard, you know, the people who were at the panel just were, you know, really, really charmed by him. And everybody was game. I thought there were some good questions and some, you know, it was a pretty good turnout. We weren't expecting a lot of people, and I thought it was a pretty good turnout. Also, you know, especially we were coming from Picard, where it was thousands of people, you know, to Evan and in one of the smaller small conference room halls. And but there was a nice turnout for him, which is great.
It was lovely.
And it was a good discussion of Hall & Oates.
Yeah, it was
a good discussion of all. I don't know how that came up.
I think someone had a T-shirt.
Yeah.
Did they?
I think.
Yep, it was a T-shirt.
Okay, I don't remember that part, but I do remember discussing all. Oh, no, he had a T-shirt of the Rolling Stones. That set me off. That's right. Because he had the Hackney Diamond shirt. That's right. Okay, you're right.
Stones.
That was such a great day at GalaxyCon Columbus because we started the day with Richard Dreyfuss.
Yeah.
And then we did the Picard and Yuri Lowenthal panels. And then we had Evan. And then we ended the day with like our live holiday special, which we will not be simulcasting, which is just for the people who are at the convention.
Yeah, it's a special treat for those who paid to get in.
Yeah, and that was a lot of fun. And we're having Patty Hawkins join us on stage and Hazel Honeysuckle. It was really a ton of fun. And, you know, usually when we do these festivals, these things at night, people go to dinner and people, you know, we don't have much expectation. But that was a huge turnout for that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So on the main stage. So that was great.
Great.
Okay. Well, look, I think we should get out of here. But we want to thank you for joining us and sticking it out. I hope you were rewarded by your faith in us that this was an episode that you would enjoy. And speaking of special thanks, a very special thanks to Mark Rivera and Peter Holmstrom. And of course, you can rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts, which helps bring other people to the show. You can also subscribe to our subscriber-only podcast, Deck 78, at TrekSportsPlus.com, where you can enjoy our new Discord channel and the TrekSports screening room as well. We keep trying to add new bonus material for all TrekSports Plus subscribers. So join TrekSports Plus today. And of course, you can let us know what you think of this and every Inglorious TrekSports episode on social at Inglorious Trek and Inglorious TrekSports on all major social channels. I'm not going to list them anymore because it's constantly changing. And, you know, we're still on X. I think we're on Threads. We're a bunch of places. But it seems like X, I don't know. So we're there. And Facebook, all these things. So, and of course, if you want to email us directly, which is probably the best way to be sure we get, because we don't see all the messages. We don't know. We don't get all the messages. It's very confusing, by the way, on Facebook and all that stuff. But you can email us at treksportsplus@gmail.com, or you can text Ashley at, no. And of course, if you want to support our documentary as Terry Farrell and the Treksports visit Star Trek's greatest locations into boldly go, you can go to makethetrek.com. That's makethetrek.com to support our documentary, which begins filming later this year. And I love when they ask on Kickstarter, you know, for updates. The update is it starts filming later this year. That's the update. You know, it's like all the pre-production work and stuff. There's not much to talk about because it's not very interesting. So Anyway, thank you as always. It's great having you here at the Little Trexpert Tidy Hole. And
what? Welcome to our Little Trexpert Hole.
The easy no.
No.
Okay. And of course, we'll be back next Thursday with an all new episode. So, on behalf of Ashley Edward Miller, Darren Doctorman, and myself, Mark A. Altman, keep on trekking ingloriously, of course. Hey, Darren, is this rumor going around that you got a new podcast?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's Trexperts adjacent. It's a fun thing. You know, it's called The Weirded Beardos. Yeah, and before you react, it's Kirk Thatcher, our favorite punk on the bus, and myself just talking about stuff.
But I hate him.
You don't hate him.
No, I'm kidding. I'm doing a song from Star Trek IV. I hate you, right?
Right. I hate you. I berate you.
Oh, yeah. But I don't berate him and I don't hate him. And if he's involved with you, then I love you.
Well, thanks. And, you know, it's basically just us talking about sort of all things related to our history of working in the industry. You know, together we have like 78 years of experience working in the entertainment biz.
I'm going to have to listen to that. I thought it was about maintaining your beards or something.
It has nothing to do with beards, actually, which is kind of funny. But it's fun. We basically hang out for an hour every other week. So come and join us. Look for the Weirded Beardos on Spotify if you just want to hear the audio. And we're actually on YouTube as well, The Weirded Beardos.
Great. Can't wait to check it out.
Thanks.
First start of the right and straight on till morning.